to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
A lot of crazy stuff went on this week with college football. We had National Signing Day, of course, the new early National Signing Day window. We're actually going to have an entire National Signing Day podcast episode next week, so we're going to cover that later. But, you know, another big thing that happened this week, Dre, was we had the Heisman Show, and with it, a lot of other key awards. And I think one thing that is really important is, you know, we want to discuss and kind of figure out, are they really giving out the awards to the best players? Like, do you really think that the current way that they're doing awards is the right way to do it?
I think it's a little bit of a fanfare popularity contest to a certain degree. Obviously, you can kind of look at past players and things of that nature. There's been quite a few snubs for the Heisman in general and even a coach of the year. But, you know, this year I wasn't upset. Personally upset at
you weren't award. Upset, man. I was pretty upset.
I wasn't upset at every award this year. I think that overall the awards were the awards, and like I said, you know, it's kind of like the Grammys. It's kind of like a lot of other things. You're gonna have people that you wish you would have won, but for the most part, most people were deserving of their wins.
So here's the problem I have with the awards, right? I think they're too stats driven. I think they're too, especially for players. I think for coaches, stats make sense, right? Because that's really the only way you can track like a coach's impact on a team is how the team performs under that coach. But I think for players, you know, a lot of times it's the stats that don't get counted. It's the eye test and stuff like that that really prove who are the best players, right? So I mean, like we can just start off here with the coach of the year. I think they missed the ball on the coach of the year. I think there's been a lot of praise for the Michigan team, and I think, you know, I don't think it's unwarranted, right? What they did in Columbus was definitely a feat of its own, and what Harbaugh and his staff were able to do this year for the Wolverines was phenomenal. But I don't think it was coach of the year worthy. I really don't.
I had Luke Fickell for coach of the year.
Okay, I like that.
Cincinnati. You know, he was a finalist, and then he guided Cincy to 12-0 season so far, and he's taken him to a college football playoff, and I think it's a big thing for Cincy as a football program, continuing to, you know, show the dominance that they've shown over the past couple of years.
And yeah, absolutely.
I think it's large to do with coaching.
And how do you not pick Fickell for that, right? Like, you know, I mean, he gets them to the college football playoff, first group of five. I mean, that should be. Yeah. I actually didn't pick Fickell. So that's kind of an interesting question that I posed there. But I actually had Dave Aranda. When you look at what he did for Baylor this year, turning him around, they were like I can't remember their record last year. It was like 2-7 or 2-10 or something like that. But they struggled last year, and he turned them around and you know, in 1 year made them a – Big 12 champion and stuff like that. I just, you know, it's just shocking to me that they picked Harbaugh out of all the coaches. Yeah. They picked Harbaugh. And I think the follow-up of that is they also snubbed some very, very qualified Broyles Award candidates. And they gave it again to a U of M, you know, candidate, Josh Gattis, OC. They overpassed Dan Lanning, right? Who took Georgia's defense to historic record year.
Gonna be taking another team there next season too.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the potential to do it at Oregon as well. And you got Jeff Grimes right on the Baylor staff. And notably, I think the one that they really snubbed here was Jim Knowles. You want to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think Jim Knowles was my pick on the year. Obviously, you know, Oklahoma State's defense was very exciting, very electrifying. They held a lot of teams, you know, to hell, honestly. You know, they brought hell and they wreaked havoc every game that they played this season. And I think, like I said earlier with Coach of the Year, a lot of the time players, they need the coach. They need the coach there. You know what I'm saying? And the defensive coordinator has a large role on every football team. So, with that being said, as you can look back in Oklahoma State's past, primarily offensive-minded football team, Jim Knowles changed that culture at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And not even just the team, it's a conference identity as well for the Big 12. They're mainly offense driven. But you know, I'm gonna take it a step further here for you, and I agree with you on Jim Knowles. This is a defense, man, that he had, and yeah, you can make the arguments about 6 year seniors. They were all a bunch of veterans. I don't care, man. Not a single five star on this defense. Are you kidding me? And they were first in defensive EPA, defensive run EPA, sacks per game, tackles for loss, third down defense. And then they were top 10 in total defense, scoring defense, rush defense. I mean, this was a just all around the board, completely stacked, loaded, balanced defense that knew how to attack you no matter what you were trying to throw at them. And you compare that with Josh Gattis, and up until the end of the season, you know, this was a Michigan offense that was by and large parts just getting it done, right? They were just doing enough against the good teams to get it done. And they weren't putting up flashy numbers on good teams, right? You look at the Michigan State game, they struggled to throw the ball. That was part of the reason why they couldn't come back in that game when Michigan State put the foot on the gas. But yeah, so that one was just shocking to me. I can't believe that they gave it to Gattis instead of Knowles.
Yeah, that was a rough pick. But Heisman, how do you feel about that one?
The best guy won, right? You'd have to be stupid to say that anybody else in the country this year other than Bryce Young deserved it. I think going into the SEC championship game, maybe there were some doubts, right? Maybe there were other guys who stepped up a little bit more. Young had struggled against Auburn for, you know, 3.5 quarters of that game. But he really came back from the start of those two last drives for Alabama against Auburn. He's just turned it up into another gear. But, you know, that's not what I had the issue with, if I'm being honest. The issue for me is Aiden Hutchinson, okay? I know you and I have gone back and forth on this, but I think Aiden Hutchinson, phenomenal player, not the best defensive player in the country. So if you're going to have a defensive guy in the Heisman, it can't be him. It's got to be Will Anderson. I mean, you put their stats next to each other. Will Anderson is better in almost every category. And he is really, I would go out and say he's one of the biggest reasons why Alabama is in the position they are right now. Because when they had that horrible defensive showing against Texas A&M, he is the guy who stood up in the locker room and put that defense on his back and has made play after play to keep them in their games and really turn around their season. So I say that's kind of what I feel about it. I don't really understand why Aiden Hutchinson deserves so much more praise than Will Anderson, but they're both terrific football players.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely hear you on that one. There was quite a few defensive choices that they could have went with. Like you'd mentioned, Will Anderson, Jordan Davis is another great player. Georgia defensive end, I believe.
Game wrecker. Yeah.
Stat packer, patter, everything of sorts. Another candidate that could have been easily replaceable for Aiden Hutchinson. But again, like we mentioned, congratulations, Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, no, he deserved it. He put the team on his back. He set an NFL or a college football record against Ohio State for most QB hurries. I mean, the dude is a man on a mission. Absolutely, he deserves all the praise that he's getting. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. The Thorpe Award is another one, and this is the one I will probably beat my chest about the loudest. This is the last one I want to cover. Well, other than the one that touches a little too close to home. But Sauce Gardner, man. Sauce Gardner, you want to talk about giving an award to the greatest player in the position? I mean, this guy is so good. He doesn't have stats because people won't throw the ball his way, right? Are you ready for this, Dre? This is remarkable. In his career, he's had 1,000 coverage snaps, okay? 1,008. He's given up no touchdowns in his entire college football career. When you're throwing against him, you have a better passer rating. If you took the snap and spiked it every single play, you get a 39.6 passer QB rating. If you're throwing to Sauce Gardner, your QBR career is 31.2. Okay. You have less than 30% completion percentage on throws in his vicinity. And he's only given up 117 yards allowed this year in 428 coverage snaps, 355 of which are press man coverage. I mean, this guy is the truth. And the only reason why his teammate won the award was because nobody was throwing the ball to Sauce Gardner.
That's fair. That's a fair. Hey, agreeable choices here. I still like Kobe. You know, he's a dog. Both sides of them are dogs. Both sides of that, you know, those defensive backs are dogs. Shout out to Jalen Foster, South Carolina, Jalen Petrie, Baylor, and Mr. McKinley of Oregon. Those were all other really, 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 really talented, amazing candidates for the Thorpe Award.
Yeah, there's going to be some great prospects heading to the NFL. A lot of teams need a Lions. So, yeah, I think that it'll be a great crop of guys. And the last award we should talk about here is the Biletnikoff. This one's pretty self-explanatory, right? And I'm going to try to recuse myself from this as much as possible without sounding like a homer. But how do you not even have a single one of the Ohio State wide receivers, even as a finalist? Even as a finalist, Dre?
I don't know. You know, it's an award that I've watched a number of my Cowboys win. And it's a difficult award to win for one. You know, as one player on the field, you're a wide receiver. Not every play comes to you like the ball comes to the quarterback. You're not in the backfield making any play action plays, you know, having holes open for you by your offensive line. It's all practically man-to-man or zone defense. So you got to really be a good route runner. You got to have some amazing hands, be fast. I do want to mention, though, that along with Ohio State snubs, there were a couple of other ones, too. Like I had mentioned to you before, Dante Cephas, 6'1", sophomore out of Kent State, who may have been added to the list a little bit late for the Biletnikoff Award. I think he was added in late October. Finished the season with 78 receptions, 1,100 yards on the season, and averaged about 14.5 yards per reception.
Yeah, just absolute stunning. What about, I've got one for you too. Jareth Stearns out of Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
Led the country in receiving yards by over 100 yards. He had 1,700 receiving yards and 14 touchdowns with 137 receptions. I mean, and just not even a mention. And his quarterback led the country in passing yards by over 1,000 yards, Dre. Bailey Zapp. I mean, 5,500 yards with almost 70% completion percentage and 56 yeah. touchdowns. I mean, this just goes to show you that it's just not about stats, right? They say it's about stats. It looks like they pick it about stats, but it's really about the best players on the best teams with the best stats. That's really what it is. And I think that's wrong. You're doing a disservice to the awards. And I think you're doing a disservice to the guys who actually deserve to win them. Not taking anything away from those that actually did, but, you know, I just think that there's a lot of guys that go unrecognized, and it's unfair.
I do want to mention before we move on to coaching carousel, Walker Award, great choice there.
I think
it's only fair for the first Walker Award to go to Mr. Walker himself.
Yeah, Kenneth Walker, absolute stud. And he's not playing in the Peach Bowl. We'll talk about that in a little bit later.
Nope,
but
he's not.
That's wild. But yeah, so you mentioned the coaching carousel. Let's get right into it. This is probably, I would say, the craziest coaching carousel maybe of all time. You have 6 destination jobs available. And for those of you that don't know what a destination job is, okay, this is not a stepping stone job. This is not, you know, a mid power five. We're talking destination jobs, cream of the crop. These are elite programs who generally don't lose coaches to other jobs, right? You got Notre Dame, Oklahoma, LSU, Miami, USC, and Oregon. In Oklahoma, when Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma, he was the first coach in something crazy like 30 years to leave the program without retiring or being fired. Isn't that just insane?
Yep.
I mean, that's the kind of craziness that we're seeing here. And he made a lateral move to USC. You got Mario Cristobal making a lateral move from Oregon to Miami, arguably actually a step down. And you got Brian Kelly with another lateral move. So this is just very interesting because, you know, this is, do you think the destination job is kind of like not a thing anymore?
Mm, to, nah, No, I think it's been time for a change, time for a change in college football here. I don't think that destination jobs are off the table. You couldn't tell me that Nick Saban's leaving Alabama, and if he does leave Alabama, then nobody is flying on that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? I think destinations play out in a little bit in both ways, for coaches to come and for coaches to go. And I think that's what it's been this past year.
Yeah, and the coordinator market has also been crazy, right? You had a bunch of notable teams with coordinators leaving, and so they had to scramble to fill those positions, right? Like Penn State's defensive coordinator left to go be the head coach of Virginia Tech, right? They actually had a great replacement with Manny Diaz, right? You've got both coordinators from Dabo Sweeney leaving, Brent Venables to Oklahoma, and Tony Elliott to Virginia, and a very interesting choice by Dabo. We'll get to that in a minute, to replace both of those from in the program. You've got Ohio State with defensive coordinator question marks that I believe they sincerely answered. And then Georgia defensive coordinator has got to be one of the most sought after coordinator jobs in the country after Dan Lanning left. You also have big time extensions. We saw Mel Tucker, James Franklin sign multi-year big bag deals. And then we'll get into this right now, Dre. I'd say you've got three programs that were on the brink of the collapse for a solid number of days here. And I think one of them arguably still is. You got Oklahoma, right? So when Oklahoma, before they signed Venables, Riley took like half their staff with them and basically seemed like half their team and half their prospects. I mean, the guy basically just raided them and went out to California. And then you had Oregon as well with a similar situation where Cristobal came in. He did a lot of, he had a lot of success with them this year. Ultimately it seemed like it was a disappointment or a continuation of the same for Ducks fans, but you know, they were also saved because I think they got a phenomenal hire, probably one of the best hires I would say out of these big time
most
schools.
Intriguing for me. Yeah. That was my most intriguing pick is Dan Lanning, heading over there to Oregon, and I'd love to see them finally get over the hump.
I think he's the guy. I think he's the guy that brings a championship into Eugene, because I think he's gonna bring that defensive edge, right? He's gonna bring what I think Oregon's been missing in those big games. And he just seems like an electric coach, man. Like, you see videos of him, he seems like he really cares. So I really like that hire. And then the last team you got on the brink of collapse is the one that arguably I think still has a lot of question marks. Clemson, right? Is this the end of an era for Dabo Sweeney and his Tigers? You see both of his offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, guys who had stayed by his side for years, turning down multiple jobs, all of a sudden jump ship. You see the offense not being able to find an identity for itself the entire year. You see recruits flipping. You see players leaving. I mean, and Dabo doesn't go out and he doesn't get a big name. He decides to stay in the program. Do you think this could be the end of an era?
I think it's a possibility simply due to the fact that, I mean, you look at Clemson these past two seasons. This year, plagued with injuries here and there. But again, you know, whenever you have so many people jumping ship, leaving early, it doesn't reflect well going into the next 4 to 5 years with recruits, unless something drastic changes about where they're headed towards. Again, mind you, the past two seasons, Clemson has been mid to a below average, I hate to say it, below average top tier team.
Yeah.
I was going to just say, you know, it's a heavy task for Dabo to reinvigorate this squad and the program.
No, I absolutely agree. I think this is a existential question for him. I think this is, and we'll see. It'll take a couple of years to see if these decisions to keep the hiring in house will pan out for him. I know that the fan base and certainly the recruits, you know, there's probably raises more questions than answers by those hires. But you know, the guys that are famous, right? The coaches that are famous always were not famous at one point, right? Yeah. So it just remains to be seen, like, in a couple of years, could we be talking about these coordinators as some of the most sought after guys for head coaching positions? And this could be ending up to be a genius move by Dabo Sweeney. Yeah. The jury will be out on that until we see, but I don't know, man. It's definitely, it's going to be a tough, tough task to rebuild the excellence that they had with the pieces that have kind of left. And I think this is a great transition to actually talk about our bowl previews. So we did 15 bowls that we're going to talk about today. Of those 15, there's some overlap between the simulation. So we're going to put some of the simulation predictions on our Twitter for those games as they're coming around. Some crazy predictions, I might add, by the simulation, including an overtime thriller between Cincinnati and Bama in the Cotton Bowl. So keep your money on that one. But we're going to start off right here with a very clear connection in the Cheez-It Bowl. Okay, we got Clemson and Iowa State. Iowa State favored by one here, and the over-under is 45.5. Dre, what do you think about this one?
I am going to go on ahead and take the Iowa State Cyclones in this one. I think with some of the injuries that Clemson suffered in the past month or so, some season-ending injuries for some players that could be utilized here. I think Iowa State may just favor out in this one. I think it'll be close though. 17-14 is where I'm going on this one.
17-14. Okay. All right. I think my score here is going to be, I like Iowa State as well. I think they're going to cover, and I think we see the over. So I'm going to go for 24-21, which would actually pull that right under the new line of 45.5. And this is going to be a battle in the red zones, right? Both teams, top 11 red zone defense. Clemson's offense has struggled to pass the ball. When they have success, it's on the ground. And, you know, how is their run defense going to be against Breece Hall, one of the best running backs in the country? And then, of course, the looming question is Dabo without the coordinators. Can he get it done? Can he scheme well enough? I don't know. I don't think so with the season that Clemson has had. I just think Iowa State is going to be more prepared for this one. I think they're going to come out on top. Matt Campbell is going to get a signature win here in the Cheez-It Bowl. The next one we've got is, I think, probably the one I'm looking forward to the most, maybe even more so than the college football playoff. We've got the Alamo Bowl between head coachless teams Oregon and Oklahoma. On paper, this is one of the most even ones. But off paper, it's certainly one of the most chaotic, right? You got transfers, you got sit-outs, you've got absolutely just, you don't know who's going to suit up for either team here. The line is Oklahoma is favored by 4.5, and the over-under is 61.5. Dre, what you got?
I have an Oregon team that I genuinely think can pull out this one. There's been a couple of injuries in Oklahoma's wide receiving core. Caleb Williams, phenomenal quarterback. I think he'll have one hell of a game. But I hope Oregon, comes out ready to play some football. Offensively, they've been struggling recently. But I think defensively, if their corners show up, they always seem to do that. Their defense has been phenomenal this year. But I genuinely see a tight game, 24-17. I'm taking Oregon. Go Ducks.
I think Oklahoma's got this one. I think it comes down to, right, you look at this a week ago and you say, hey, like, both of these teams are going to be borderline depressed in this game. now it's going to be, both teams are going to be through the wall. I mean, I think which team wants to prove to their new head coaching staff, right, that they're ready to play for him. You got tons of injuries, sit outs, right? Like both three of the top four Oklahoma defensive players, Nick Benito, Perrion Winfrey, Brian Asamoah, have already said they're going to sit out for the NFL draft, right? You've got two receivers, like you mentioned, in the transfer portal with Hazelwood, Theo Weiss, and others that are injured, like you said. I still think, though, Oklahoma's the better team. I think Caleb Williams makes enough plays. And I just think Oregon was a team this year that was propelled by that victory against Columbus. You take that away and you look at their resume, you look at how they performed. It was just pretty underwhelming. I think that's why I'm going to take Oklahoma.
That's fair. That's a fair pick.
The next one we got here on the docket is the Peach Bowl. Okay, so this one is pretty interesting. We originally talked about this last week. I had said that Kenny Pickett was going to throw all over the Spartans. Well, Kenny Pickett's not playing in the game anymore, so going to have to take a step back on that one. You had said that Kenneth Walker was going to run all over the Panther defense. Kenneth Walker's not playing anymore.
Nope.
So, I'm going to be honest. I don't know where to go with this.
I literally don't even have a pick here on my notes. I'm still gonna stick with my original though. I'm gonna say go Sparty. Go Sparty.
Yeah. I originally had Pitt winning this game. I think Michigan State, if you take away Pickett out of the equation, I just think Michigan State overall becomes the better team, the better threat. So I probably will take Michigan State as well in this. I'm definitely going to take the under, though. I don't think that these teams, especially with both of their offensive weapons, I don't think that they hit the 60 mark, like the over-under. All right, next up, we got the Gator Bowl. Okay, Wake Forest, Texas A&M. Pretty interesting storylines here, Dre. Texas A&M top quarterback, okay, Zach Calzada in the transfer portal. Second quarterback, Haynes King, don't know if he's going to play. So that means third stringer Blake Bost most likely going to be the starter. And they also don't have Isaiah Spiller. He said he's going to sit out.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. So absolutely decimated TAMU team there. And they also don't have two of their best players on defense. DeMarvin Leal, arguably a top 10 pick, and Leon O'Neal also out. And they're going to go up against a completely healthy Wake Forest team.
Yeah.
They're favored, though, by 7. I don't know. I don't know if I like that.
I originally looked at this game earlier this week, and I said to myself, if Texas A&M somehow manages to reel in a couple of those players that are on the injury list, as well as Isaiah Spiller playing, they should be fine. Now, on another note, going into this football game with the amount of things that have occurred, I'm going to take Wake Forest. I genuinely don't see a fully loaded Texas A&M squad, although I really do love the Aggies. I just don't see it happening. It's probably going to be a tight one still, but I'm probably just going to go with Wake Forest by 7.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. I think there's two possible outcomes for this game, right? If the Texas A&M defense shows up without their leaders, this could be an under battle. And if they can keep the Wake Forest offense off the field, then they have a chance to win the game. But, you know, if they can't stop Sam Hartman in that Wake Forest offense with the craziest play action read option I've ever seen in my life, I think Wake Forest runs away with it. And I think it could get ugly, especially if Texas A&M has to rely on Blake Bost to pass their way back into a game. I'm going to take the Demon Deeks as well. And I do like that kind of spread that you're talking about, 7 points. All right, so now we're going to get into a really intriguing one we talked about last week. Very quickly, I think we broke this one down beautifully last time, so really don't need to spend any more time on it. I think the only storyline that we missed really was arguably the most exciting 1v1 matchup that I've probably heard of in the last 5 years. You're going to have Sauce Gardner against Jameson Williams.
Yep.
I mean, that's going to be a phenomenal matchup. Who do you think here? You know, we talked last week. You said Bama was going to run away with it.
Yeah, I think Bama might take this one still. I don't think it'll be the 14 or what is it, 13.5 spread. Mm-hmm. I think it'll probably be a little bit closer than that, 7. Maybe some garbage points if it is 13.5, let's say 14. I think it'll probably be garbage points if they do get it that wide open. But I think since he gives a fighting chance at all costs, and I think that they have a really good opportunity to pull it out.
Yeah, it's a strength on strength game for both teams. And I really like Cincy's odds here. I think, like I said last week, right, they have the best matchup against Alabama. I still think Bama pulls it away just because, you know, they've been in this situation before. They've got the coaching staff. They've got the execution of the players to rely on. But I think Cincy's going to give him a damn good scare. And since he pulls it out, I mean, I wouldn't be too shocked. I like Bama, you know, maybe 3 to 4 points. I could see like a 21-17 game or like a 28-24 game. That's kind of what I think's happening. But I guess, you know, like I said, if Cincinnati pulls this out, I'm not going to say I called it, but I would definitely not be surprised.
Yeah, that's fair.
Time for
Cincy to get saucy.
Yeah, man, Sauce Gardner, he's an absolute beast. If you don't draft him in the NFL, I don't know what you're doing. That guy's an elite player. I don't care who he's playing against. I mean, it takes talent to not give up a touchdown your entire career. You could be playing against Little Sisters of the Poor. That's still crazy. So the winner of that game is going to play the winner of the Orange Bowl. Okay, you got Georgia, Michigan. We talked about this one again at length last week. You got two game managers under center for both teams. You're going to have power run versus power run, big defense against big defense. Georgia's favored by 7.5. A lot of people saying that they think Georgia could run away with it. Dre, what do you think?
I'm going with Georgia. Sticking with the guns this last week. I think Georgia, overall, they played a really good season. I think they had a bad loss against an Alabama team, and I don't think they're going to let it happen again. I think they would love a second shot at Alabama, and they know that's on the line.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a great pick. I'm going to agree with you there. I like Georgia as well to win. I have here Michigan beating the spread. I think it'll be like a field goal game. But I do think there's going to be some more points than people are expecting. I think the offenses are going to open up those defenses. But, you know, having said that, also alternate reality could see it being like a 13-10 game, right? Like SEC as good football, as these two defenses are. Yeah. It'll be a close one. All right, the Citrus Bowl, okay? We've got Iowa, Kentucky, defensive struggle again. Top running back for Iowa, Tyler Goodson. He's a top 5 draft running back positional ranking, okay, in the draft next year. He has announced he's not going to play in the Citrus Bowl. So who do you have here knowing that? Kentucky is favored by 3.
I have Kentucky. I'd love to see a tough Kentucky squad beat Iowa this year in the Citrus Bowl. As long as they minimize turnovers, fumbles on their running backs, it's been ridiculous this season. Interceptions, I believe their quarterback's thrown a dozen of them already this year. Mm-hmm. And if they need to keep their secondary in line, they've been struggling this year. But as long as all of those things fall into place, those three main points for me: turnovers, fumbles, and interceptions, and their defensive backs show up, their secondary shows up, they'll be fine. I think they take a 3-point. I think they take the 3-point spread.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think both run games are gonna, you know, struggle against the good run defenses that each team has. I think whoever can win that battle in the trenches is going to win the game. And I also think whoever can complement that run heavy offense of theirs with some solid quarterback play is going to win the game. And that's really the point that I'm going to make my decision on. I trust Will Levis more than I trust Spencer Petras. So I think Kentucky, the Wildcats, take it. I have them covering as well. I think it's going to be like a touchdown game, but I'm going to hammer the under on this one. I don't see it getting over 44 points with as good as these two defenses. And also, you know, as shaky as these offenses are for both teams. The next game we have is the Fiesta Bowl. Okay. So we talked about this one last week. This is Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. We got some notable sit outs again, which is, you know, becoming a big theme this year. Obviously the Notre Dame Fighting Irish don't have their head coach, Brian Kelly. They also, their best playmaker on offense and on defense, being Kyren Williams on offense, their running back, and Kyle Hamilton, arguable top 10 pick in the draft next year, the safety. They're both sitting out the Fiesta Bowl. You know, what kind of impact do you see that having, and how do you think this game ends up?
Well, last week I chose against my Cowboys. I'm not choosing against them this week. I think hopefully with the sitting out of their best defensive safety, Spencer Sanders doesn't have nearly as many troubles making deeper plays, trying to spread the field out. Obviously, I'm still concerned about injuries on Oklahoma State side. Don't know if Jalen is going to suit up. that'll be a big, big question. And he sat out in that Big 12 championship. If Warren decides to pull up, I think we have a much better shot at taking this one home.
Yeah, and the big thing here for the Cowboys is even though he's going to Ohio State, Jim Knowles has said that he will be coaching this final game for the Cowboys. So that is going to be a big key for their defense. And everything I said last week kind of holds true still. I think it's going to be whoever figures out the other defense sooner. I still think that, especially with the absence of Kyle Hamilton and Kyron Williams, it just makes the equation for the Fighting Irish that much harder. I think Oklahoma State wins. They beat the spread. But I do think we see a little bit of a defensive struggle here, especially with Knowles staying in to play those calls and make those schemes. All right, next we've got the last two that we covered last week, and then we're going to get into some real fun ones. Ohio State, Utah, and the Rose Bowl. I'm just going to go ahead off rip right here. We talked about this last week. I was really nervous about this game. It looks like so far up to this point in the weeks, right? Garrett Wilson and Olave look like they're going to be a go for the game. So that certainly helps the Buckeyes. But again, it's all about that toughness. We'll see if the Ohio State defense shows up. If not, Utah probably runs rampant on them. I have the Buckeyes winning, but Utah beating. And I definitely think we're going to see the under here. However, I could see both teams running up the score. I could see this becoming like a 42 to 35 kind of game. What do you think about that?
I still am going to choose Ohio State. I think that they just is a football squad. They've went through a lot this year. They haven't had a rough season the way that their fan base has led themselves to believe. And I think that overall Ohio State's defense, as long as you mentioned, as long as they show up, ready to play some hard-nosed defense, CJ Stroud's going to do his thing. And I think you'll watch if they show up, it'll probably be a pretty solid dub for Ohio State. I'm going to say probably about 14 points. Okay. So if and only if, again, it's Ohio State's game to lose. That's what I'll leave it at. Sure. It's their game to lose.
Okay. Yeah, no, I like that. All right, and then the last of the New Year's Six Bowls we've got here. We talked about this one last week as well. Baylor versus Ole Miss. Okay, we talked about the Ole Miss offense and Matt Corral against the Baylor defense. The big key coming into this is who's Baylor going to start at quarterback, right? All indications from Dave Aranda and his medical staff this week are pointing to the fact that Jerry Bohannon will be able to suit up in that game, which I think is a big plus for the Baylor Bears. But again, I think that Matt Corral comes through. I think he makes those, Heisman-esque plays to put the Rebels over the edge in this one. I have Ole Miss winning, but I do see it being a pretty defensive game because I think Baylor is going to keep it close.
Yeah. Yep. I think Ole Miss is a really good football team this year. They have a really good offense, and I think it'll be a shootout, as most people will believe it to be. Defenses are solid, but I think it'll probably be Ole Miss in a 14 point dub.
All right, so now we've kind of hit all the bowls that most people know, right? So now we get to the fun ones, right? These are teams that we believe probably have good shots at finishing off great seasons. Definitely deserve some credit here. Let's talk about it. It's going to be a lot of electric games here. We're going to start off with the R&L Carrier New Orleans Bowl. We've got the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns here against the Herd of Marshall. I think this is going to be an absolute awesome game, right? Okay. Louisiana, great, great game control and cleanly team, okay, with the ball. They are the third least turnover giving team, okay? Marshall passing offense is really the biggest driver for them. And it's going to come down to whether or not Marshall can keep it clean and force obvious passing downs so they can get after the Louisiana quarterback with their pass rush. Louisiana's favored by 5 and the over under is 55. Dre, what do you think about this one? I have Louisiana winning. I think it's going to be close And I think we're going to see that game control style of Louisiana really grind the time away. We're going to see an under game here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to agree with you on this one. I think Louisiana is a football squad this year. They've ran that clock and they know how to run it well. Marshall, on another note, is going to have to change the pace of their football style to really keep up with the Raging Cajuns this season, or with this bowl game. So let's go with the. I'm going to go with the 6-point victory here, Louisiana, 2 field goals.
Okay, I like that. I like that a lot. The next one, early favorite for me, the Frisco Bowl. Phenomenal name. UTSA San Diego State. This is going to be one of the most underrated bowls of the season, I think. Okay, these are the two best group of five teams other than Cincinnati. You've got SDSU here. That's a power grind team against more, a little bit more of a flashy, balanced UTSA team that got a lot of hype this year for being undefeated up until the very end. Okay. Turnovers are going to be key in this game. UTSA is second in turnover margin in the country. And then I think the other key here is which running offense can break the running D. These are both, especially SDSU. They are a power run football team. Not going to see a lot of dropbacks here. Definitely not going to see a lot of shotgun from the Aztecs. Who do you have in this one? UTSA favored 2.5 and over under 49.5.
Like I mentioned earlier, I really like UTSA. First of all, I love San Antonio. Let's get that out the way, even though everybody seems to hate San Antonio. Sincere McCormick is going to be a huge factor in this. You know, if he continues his record-breaking season, he's set a trio of school records, 1,400 yards rushing, 298 carries, and scoring 15 touchdowns. He's a beast. I'm taking UTSA in this one.
Not so fast. I've got San Diego State, the Aztecs here. I think they're going to control the game, grind it. We'll see what happens here, but I'm going to have to take the Aztecs in this one. I think it's going to be a grind out game.
SDSU is a good football team. Don't get it twisted. They're a good football team.
They're very, very – they for their last performance against Utah State, they fell short in the Mountain West Championship, and the reason for that was because they had a bunch of players out because of COVID. So if you're expecting that team to show up against UTSA, you've got a whole other thing coming, and I think that it's going to be a much better game than a lot of people are giving credit to. They're looking at this. They're seeing UTSA. They're penciling them in. They're like, these guys are going to win 100%. We'll see. I think it's going to be a lot closer. And this will be one that we'll have to tune in and watch together, Dre, because we're on opposite sides.
Yeah.
All right. The next one we've got here, very sneaky bowl here. Birmingham Bowl. Okay. Houston, Auburn. No Bo Nix, no Roger McCreary for the Auburn Tigers. Okay. Can Finley do enough against this tough Houston defense? This is a Houston defense that is in the top 20 in basically every statistical category for a defense. And then on the flip side, can the defense of Auburn hold this Houston offense, specifically the passing offense?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say with Auburn's drop to Alabama to end out the season, based upon watching that football team, Houston looked bad too against Cincy. But I'm still going to take Houston in this one. I think Houston has the better football team overall, offensively and defensively. They have a great head coach there. And to finish out a season against an Auburn team that they look a little bit defeated, to say the least. I genuinely see Houston probably taking this one. You know, Auburn took a tough loss in the Iron Bowl. So.
Yeah, this was an interesting one for me, Dre. I originally had Auburn, and I started pulling up the game notes that I wanted to write on this game. And so I looked at the injuries, the transfers, and everything. This is what I found. Okay, Auburn, starting quarterback, Bo Nix, transferred. Running back, Sean Shivers, transferred. Wide receiver, transfer. Safety, transfer. Defensive end, transfer. Two of their offensive linemen, okay, one of them injured, the other one transferred. Their offensive coordinator fired, and their top defensive player, Roger McCreary, is sitting out because of the NFL draft.
Again, Auburn spent They're spent, yeah, man.
They're just it's a defeated team at this point, and they're going up against a completely healthy Houston team that's going to be rebounding off of, like you said, a very bad performance against Cincinnati in the championship game. I think Houston just is the better team in this scenario. Like you said, I think Houston wins as well, and I think their defense makes a statement here against Auburn in the Birmingham Bowl. All right, now we got a mashup bowl kind of in our second to last bowl here, the Fenway Bowl. This is going to be a bowl game that's played on a baseball field. This is pretty cool. I didn't actually know that this was really a bowl game until this year. I'll be the first to admit that. But we got two pretty good teams here, SMU, Virginia, both high-powered offenses against mediocre defenses, okay, which means, like, which defense is going to get that stop, right? Like, you see this all the time in Big 12 games. You know, you see two high-powered offenses and then middling defenses, and which defense makes that play to win the game? Because, you know, it's going to come down to it, right? Both teams are missing very key pieces, right? Head coach for SMU and offensive coordinator gone. Two of their top three receivers gone. Virginia, three of their top five offensive linemen gone, as well as one of their leading tacklers on defense, Noah Taylor. So what do you think about this one? The lines are practically a wash. It's UVA minus one. And over-under on this one is big. It's 71.
Yeah, so I got a chance to watch SMU actually play earlier this year against Navy. They look like a solid football team. I do genuinely love, at least at the time, I love their coaching. You know, I think that kind of led to their demise this year with some of the latter half of the season falling apart for SMU. Virginia, though, they look like a really they're a spent team too. You know, it's been a rough season for Virginia. They're spent. I like SMU just because, again, they have a lot of energy. They're a small school. And whenever I got to watch them play firsthand, their bench is hype. They like each other. They like to play with each other. They like to be around each other. Actually, you know, I went to school with Noah Taylor, funny enough, around the area at one point, and good kid. I think Virginia has a solid defense. I think they have the better defense. Again, bad defenses on both sides, the better defense, solid defense. But I think SMU probably wins this one.
Yeah, you know, you made a lot of good points, and I won't touch too much on much more because you kind of really said what I wanted to say. This is a Virginia team, like you said, right? Kind of a disappointing season. They came into the season with a lot of hope. They knew their offense was going to be good. Maybe not as good as it ended up being, but they knew it was going to be good, right? And it was really going to be a question of whether or not their defense was going to hold them in games and stuff like that, and make some big stops. That wasn't really the case. I think this is a good statement here to make for Virginia, to end kind of the era that was Bronco Mendenhall for them. I think their offense makes some plays here. I like them to win. I like them to cover. And believe it or not, Dre, I'm actually going to take the over in this game, even though it's 71. I think this has potential for both teams to get into the 40s. This is going to be a bowl game, slinging the ball around. It's going to be a ton of fun to watch. But yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. And that's going to go right into our last game here, which before we talk about this game, the name, there's something that miffs me about this name. Have you ever seen a person advertise a bowl? This is it's the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl.
No.
Jimmy Kimmel is advertising on this bowl. Like, he's sponsoring this bowl. I've never seen that before.
No, never.
That's wild to me.
Typically businesses.
Yeah. So, like, that's food, just crazy to me.
Insurance.
Yeah. Like the State Farm Peach Bowl or the, you know, the Plum Bowl or something like that.
All State but, Sugar.
Yeah. We got the
Chick-fil-A. Cheese It. Damn it, Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy Kimmel coming in with the sauce, I guess. I wonder how much he paid for that. But yeah, so this one's actually going to be a really interesting matchup. We got Utah State and Oregon State, right? Oregon State has some quality wins. I think they beat Utah, USC this year. They got really good wins in the Pac-12. But winning away from home has been an issue for them. Okay, they've only won one game this year away from their home stadium. They have the best run game in the Pac-12, though. Okay, but they're going up against a very explosive and electric Utah State pass offense that's averaging over 300 yards per game. And I think third down defense is going to be key. Okay, Oregon State, one of the worst third down defensive teams in the country. Utah State is the best in the Mountain West. It's going to come down to third downs. I like Oregon State here. I think they convert more of those. What do you think, Dre?
I'm going to go with Oregon State as well. They've had, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of big wins this year for them. And I'm hoping that, you know, at least on their end, that they show up defensively. I think that would be a big, big, big show out for them if they can show up defensively on this Utah State team. And I'm going to go with Oregon State by – it's going to be a tight one in my opinion. I say they're going to win probably by 7 points, 10, 7 to 10.
All right, yeah, so that's the last bowl game we had. Before we wrap this up, I just have like a question to you, Dre Ray. When I was doing a lot of research on this, you see all the sit outs, you see all of the transfers, right, because of the new transfer portal. And I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, you used to see a lot of players sitting out, especially on like your middling teams that it's not a New Year's Six bowl game. But this year you're seeing, I mean, Kenneth Walker, Kenny Pickett sitting out the Peach Bowl. Yeah. I mean, that's a big bowl game. And there's talk of teams, players for Ohio State sitting out the Rose Bowl. I mean, that's just, you know, when we were growing up, that was out of the question. Like, yeah, you're playing for those games. Do you think that, you know, this new sit out culture and the early transfer announcement, like, do you think that's a good thing for college football? Do you think it's a bad thing? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's about 50-50. It's good and bad in its own ways and own respects. I think it gives the players the opportunity to go chase that bag, which I always love. You know, that's what they deserve as athletes that are actually out there playing on the field. But I do think it does a disservice to some of the football programs that they signed to, committed their season to, and they really just have to finish out one game. You know, I could understand faking an injury, as we watch some of the NBA players do, and sit out before the big game to kind of preserve your body. I get it, but you know, something about it just kind of it puts a little bit of a funny taste in my mouth watching so many players sit out. You know, especially a lot of these massive bowls that most of the time when you look at it, it kind of sets the tone for the last bit of the season, and it definitely sets the tone going into next season. You know, a lot of teams that win that bowl game and they continuously bring players back with this new transfer portal, some of them dudes aren't coming back, man. And some of them are going to have to deal with some tough losses, some tough takes, you know, over this next couple of weeks when we're watching all of these bowl games occur.
Yeah, no, very well said. And I think that's a perfect place to end it here this week. Like I said, next week we're going to have our national signing day. We're actually going to bring in an in-house recruiting guy for you guys to kind of talk about some of the more intriguing classes and all the craziness that happened in the early signing window, and also looking ahead to some of the best uncommitted players that haven't even picked a school yet and where we think they could end up, who has some of the best classes. It's going to be a really fun episode because recruiting is probably one of the most interesting things about college football that make it unique. But yeah, so thank you guys for tuning in today. As always, you can catch us on Twitter at @SlightOffsides, and we will catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.